I'd like to speak today a little bit about Kabbalah, even though I am barely old enough to speak about Kabbalah, but it's Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer is the day in which the Kabbalah was revealed. We have a tradition that the Zohar was revealed by Rav Shimon Bar Yochai on the day of his death. Today is the Hilula de Rashbi, is the yahrzeit of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, the day that the great light of the Kabbalah, of the Zohar, certainly came into our world. That's one of the reasons for the bonfires. The bonfires represent the great light of the Zohar that was revealed by Rav Shimon Bar Yochai on this day. And I'd like to speak a little bit about the generation before Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. I'd like to speak a little bit about the Kabbalah as it's studied by Rabbi Akiva and his contemporaries. To try to look at a famous story about the study of esoteric wisdom, and to try to learn from that, perhaps glean from that, a sense of what one needs in order to study the Kabbalah. It's the famous story of the four rabbis who entered into the Pardes, the four rabbis who entered into this orchard. Now, we don't assume that they entered into a physical orchard. They entered into study of something very, very esoteric. Right? Four rabbis go into an orchard. Right? Rabbi Akiva, Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, and Acher, and Elisha Ben Avuya. They go in to study together. One can only begin to imagine what was discussed over the time that they were there together. One can only surmise as to the arrangements they made in advance. How and why did they decide to take off a week and or 2 weeks or a month and go away on retreat? What led them to come together? We don't know. We only know that it was a disaster and that it's not something you want to try at home. Famous Gemara in Chagiga at the top of the page, source number one. Tana Rabbanan arba nichnasu bepardes. There were four who entered the sublime orchard. Ve'elu hein ben Azai uben Zoma. Two very famous, prestigious rabbis who are not called rabbi for some reason. Ben Azai and Ben Zoma. Acher, the other one, the nickname for the great sage Elisha Ben Avuya that he was given after he became a heretic, which according to this Gemara was after the story of this Gemara, we're almost telling you what's going to happen. He walked in as Elisha ben Avuya, and he left as another, somebody else. The Rabbi Akiva, it's the only normal one, one rabbi. Rabbi Akiva and these other three people who clearly have a story. Something going on. Two of them are great sages who are not given the title rabbi, and one of them doesn't even get to use his first name anymore. So says, and we all know what happens. Doesn't go well. Rabbi Akiva comes out untouched, and the way we generally learn this story is the story is not about Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva survives the road trip to Gehenna, so to speak. Nobody else comes back. Rabbi Akiva comes back. Does Rabbi Akiva come back better, bigger, smarter? We don't know. We don't even focus on that. We just know four guys got in a car, drove up to the mountains, and Rabbi Akiva is the only guy who came back. You can imagine hearing his car like chugging and clunking as it finally makes it back. He gets back to his wife and he says, I don't know where anybody else is. Let's look at the story carefully, try to figure out the message that the rabbis could be telling us with this story. The first thing that we may not know, if we don't study the Gemara inside, is that there's a little more to the story right at the beginning than we might know. It's not just that they go in and they start discussing it and it doesn't go well. Amar lahem Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says to his colleagues, Kisha'atem magi'in etzel avnei shayish tahor. When you reach the pure marble stones, the slightest idea what he's talking about. When you reach the pure marble stones, do not say, there is water here, there is water here, how can we continue further? Everybody got that? Don't forget that. If you forget that, by the way, I take no responsibility for whether you will be able to leave this ship. That is the key line of the Gemara, is something which is very hard to understand. That Rabbi Akiva gave him a warning and says, when you reach the pure marble stones, don't say it's water. That's it. That's what we know. Where are they going? What are they doing? Well, it's clear that they're going on a journey. It's clear that they're going on a journey into worlds which we have trouble perceiving and understanding. And it should be clear to anyone who knows a little bit about meditation and Kabbalah that it's not an actual wall and it's not actual water, but that they are in their meditative state going from state to state to state, higher and higher. They're going to get together, they're going to meditate, they're not just going to discuss Kabbalah. They're going to do something mystical. I don't know what that means. They're going to go somewhere. And there's a dangerous point along the way. And Rabbi Akiva seems to be the one who's been there and knows it. And he says, we're going to go on this journey together. I don't know how long it's going to take. But if and when we get to the place that appears to be marble stones, don't think it's water. Danger. And they go. Ben Azai Hitzitz Umes. Disaster. Disaster. They go on this journey together, and three out of the four never truly come back. Ben Azai looks, I don't know where, but somewhere he shouldn't have looked, and he died. Alav hakatuv omer yakar beinei Hashem hamavtala chasidav. As the pasuk says, difficult in the eyes of Hashem is the death of his devout ones. What do you mean, as it says? What does that have to do with the fact that he glanced and died? What does that pasuk, that he was a devout one, have to do with his death? We don't know. But we know that they're in this meditative state. One of them looks somewhere he shouldn't look, and he does. Benzoma hitzitz. Benzoma also looks, but he doesn't die. Venifga, and he becomes crazy. He becomes mentally unstable. Va'alav hakatuv omer, dvash matzata echol dayecha. If you find honey, don't eat too much, because you might get sick and vomit. Huh? Two down. This is the Talmudic version of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Okay, two down. Two haven't made it. Next. Acher kitzeitz b'netiot. Acher cuts down the saplings, which is a Talmudic way of saying he became a heretic. Through this process, somehow he became a heretic, and he also never left, never came back as who he was. Three out of four are down. And just this statement, Rabbi Akiva yatzal b'shalom. Rabbi Akiva's okay. What happened? What are the rabbis trying to tell us here? The dangers of of involving oneself in meditative Kabbalah? Absolutely. Absolutely. There is something here that tells us to beware, not to get too involved in certain kinds of mystical practices, because they're not. It's not for the average person. It wasn't even for these great sages. Is it for anyone? I'd like to suggest, based on an interesting article written a number of years ago in an interdisciplinary journal called Shofar, I saw an article which got me thinking about who these three failures were and why they failed. Is it simply coincidence that Rabbi Akiva comes out okay? That Ben Azai dies, that Ben Zoma goes crazy, and that Acher becomes a heretic? Was it just chance? And was it chance, not simply that Rabbi Akiva should have survived and the other three failed, but is it chance that one specifically dies, one specifically become a heretic? Is there anything that we know about these individuals that could let us understand why they were in danger? Were there any red flags that someone should have seen before they let them into the Pardes and said, excuse me, based on your background, I'm not sure if you should be doing this. You didn't read the sign. Let's look at the story itself, the Gemara in Chagiga, and also let's look at some comments that we know about these great rabbis that might help us understand. The Gemara in Chagiga is primarily interested with Acher, the big failure, the one who became the heretic. And the Gemara there in Chagiga tries to explain to us why he failed, what happened, why he became a heretic. Acher kitzeitz b'netiyot. Acher chopped down saplings in the orchard. It is upon him that the verse states, let not your mouth bring guilt upon your flesh. What happened? How did this great sage become a heretic after spending a few days at a Kabbalah center? When Acher entered the orchard, read this in English, he saw the angel Metatron. When he went into the heavenly spheres, when he somehow got a glimpse, and I explain this as best as I can, I too don't have the knowledge to understand what this means. But when he went into the heavenly spheres, the Talmud says he saw the angel Metatron, who was given permission to sit in order to record the merits of the Jewish people. And here is this angel, and he's sitting and writing. Now, what's wrong with that? Acher said, we have a tradition that above there is neither sitting nor competition, nor the back of the head, nor weariness. If in the heavens God is apparent, how can anyone sit? It's a chutzpah. Here we're all sitting because God is hidden. But when you get up to heaven, God is very apparent. Everybody stands up. We know one thing about angels. There's one thing that they don't have. They don't have knees. Really. They have no knees. They don't need to sit. Because they're never going to sit if they're in the presence of the divine. They're always standing at attention, waiting to do something. And Acher goes up, and he sees this mega angel. And he's actually sitting and writing things down. Yet Metatron is sitting. Perhaps there are actually two authorities, God and Metatron. And he says, well, maybe there are two bosses up there. Now, I don't know why Metatron was sitting. And I don't know what it means that Metatron was sitting. And I don't know why, if no one's allowed to sit before God, Metatron is allowed to sit. But Acher goes up, obviously with some preconceived notions, or obviously with some sphakos already, And what he sees destroys his emunah. He sees something that leads him to believe that there are two authorities above. Maybe one that's in charge of good and one that's in charge of bad. He sees this angel sitting there and he says, it must be there are two deities. And Mitatron was given permission to erase the merits of Acher. Yotza basko v'amra shuvu bonim shuvavim chutz me Acher. And a voice went out and said, everyone is invited to do tshuva, except for Acher. Acher has gone too far. How dare a sage of Israel question whether there is one God? So the Gemara here is pretty clear about what happened. At least to Acher. Acher saw something that destroyed his belief in one single God. Now the question is, did everyone else see Metatron? Was it that at some point in this journey in their meditative state, they headed in different directions, and Acher accidentally opened the Metatron office door, and he saw him sitting behind his desk? Or did everyone see Metatron sitting there? Certainly perhaps the master, Rabbi Akiva, and yet it somehow didn't affect them in the way that it affected Acher. The Gemara goes on and says, Acher mai, what ultimately led to Acher's failure? Zemer Yevani lo pasak mi pume. A Greek song never ceased from his mouth, even before he went astray. And they say about Acher that when he would stand up from his seat, not his eat, sorry, his seat in the study hall, many heretical tracts would fall from his lap. Come on, guys, you know what that is. A little comic book inside the Gemara standing up. So it looks like you're learning Gemara when the Rebbe's talking. What's the Gemara saying? He always sang Greek songs. He always had heretical tracts on his lap beneath the table at the Kollel Risho. He had one eye on the source sheets. Everybody would think, ooh, wow, he learns so much on Sunday morning. But really underneath he had heretical tracts. Why does the Gemara say that? What the Gemara is saying is that everyone saw Metatron. Rabbi Akiva also saw Metatron. Whatever that means. What the Gemara is saying is what primed the Acher to take this moment and go in the wrong direction. The Gemara says he already had many questions. He was already dabbling in Greek thought. He was already dabbling in Greek texts. He already had many questions in his mind. He already wasn't sure of his belief. And when he got up there, he saw stuff that he couldn't assimilate into his Jewish knowledge. Specifically, if there was one thing that Acher lost sleep over, it was the question of whether there was one God or Chas V'Shalom two. Because the question of whether there is one God or two is not simply a question of monotheism versus polytheism, but the question of one God versus two gods is the issue of tzaddik v'ralo, v'rasha v'tovlo. The original idol worship, the original paganism, was not to believe in a million gods, but two. How could it be that bad things happen and good things happen? The easiest answer is two gods. Two guys that struggle with each other, two guys that sit down in a meeting and one wins and one loses each time. The original Zoroastrianistic paganism was to believe in a good God and a bad God. The Gemara is about to explain to us that not only did Acher in general dabble in heretical views, but specifically what bothered him so much was the question of how good things and bad things could both happen in this world. And he was looking at those books to see if maybe the answer was found in a pagan Famous story. The Yerushalmi says in Chagiga, the story was a little different. Pa'am achaz hayayoshev v'shoneh. Source number two. There was one time where he was sitting and learning, v'ra'a adam echad alala rosh hadekel. The two famous stories that occur that are witnessed by Elisha ben Avuya. The boy who goes up to the top of the tree and he's listening to his father. His father says, please do me the favor of chasing away the mother bird and taking those eggs. The two mitzvos in the Torah that promise long life together. Listening to your parents, honoring your parents and chasing away the mother bird. And the kid is doing both. And he heads up on the tree. He goes up the ladder and he falls and dies. And says the Yerushalmi in Chagiga that Acher sees this and is very, very upset. Where's the justice of all of this? And the second story, the famous story that involves the 10 martyrs. And how he saw the death of great rabbis and he says, where is the justice of all of this? This is the Torah and this is the reward, says the Yerushalmi. What is the Gemara effectively telling us? The Gemara is telling us that Acher failed for a reason. He never should have been there. Somebody, some social worker, some assistant principal should have flagged this guy. Don't let him go into the Pardes because he lacks something essential for the study, the safe study of Kabbalah. Faith that is unshakable. The man never should have been there because he walked in with doubts. He walked in not being sure if there was one God or two gods. He walked in with serious questions about what he believed. And it was thus very dangerous for him to engage in this kind of mystical Kabbalistic thought. Because it's going to expose you to things that are going to confuse you even more. If you know what you're talking about, if you know what you believe, you may be strong enough. But if you don't go there. It was no accident. Acher never should have been in the car. And I believe that the same thing is true about the other two disasters, Ben Azai and Ben Zoma. But here we have to look a little further to try to understand. What do we know about these two individuals? What do we know about Ben Azai and Ben Zoma? There is a famous Gemara in Kedushin that says that these two men, Ben Azai and Ben Zoma, neither of whom are called rabbi, by the way, are the pinnacle of Torah study. See, it's an almost laughable Gemara. If one betroths a woman on the condition that I am a student, student here means a chacham. Right? Let's say I propose to a woman and I put a little agreement on it. I say, here you are betrothed to me, can you imagine this under the chuppah? Hare at mekudeshes li betabazu, on the condition that I am a Talmud Chacham. Oh boy, can you imagine the rumbles in the audience? I don't know, is he a Talmud Chacham? We'll take out his grades, we'll see how he did. Did he take the Shir final? Maybe he never took the final, I don't know. So the Gemara says you don't have to be Shimon ben Azai or Shimon ben Zoma. Don't worry. Right? As long as you can answer a simple question in Maseches Kala, which is not so simple, then you're a Talmud Chacham. But what does it mean to be a big time, a major league Talmud Chacham is ben Azai and ben Zoma. So just understand who these two other guys were. Ben Azai uben Zoma, says Rashi, Talmidim hayu ubachurim. They were Talmidim and they were Bachurim. They were young. They were child prodigies. V'lo ba'u l'chlal smicha. They never able to get smicha. They died young. Two whiz kids, two geniuses. They died young. Rashi here doesn't point out why they died young. But we know that one died in the orchard and another one went crazy and something must have happened. So what happened to these guys? Let's start with Ben Zoma. The Bavli and Sota says an interesting thing. Mishemes Ben Zoma batlu hadarshanin. When Ben Zoma died, the Gemara talks in Sota about how certain individuals personify, exemplify a certain type of Torah study or a certain Midah. And when they died, it was as if the whole Midah died. No one could do that anymore. No one was modest anymore. No one was patient anymore after this paradigm died. So the Gemara says that when Ben Zoma died, the Darshanim ceased to exist. What does it mean to be a Darshan? Is that good? Is that bad? I don't know. I hear a Darshan every Shabbos. It sounds like it's good to be a Darshan. But not necessarily so. The Gemara in Chagiga, I believe this is the Gemara in Chagiga. Sorry, it doesn't have another source line there. The Gemara in Chagiga proceeds, and you have to listen closely now. The Gemara in Chagiga proceeds to tell us a bizarre story about Ben Zoma. After we know that three didn't come out fine, and Akiva came out fine, and after we learn about Acher and what happened with him, then the Gemara says, what about Ben Zoma? Tells us a story about Ben Zoma, seemingly related to his failure to come out okay. What do we know about Ben Zoma? So the Gemara says, okay, now, get ready for this one. Because we're involved in an intense, esoteric, mystical story. And then we get into this intense back and forth about theological questions of Sadik Veralo and Acher. And then the Gemara says, Sha'alu et Ben Zoma mahu l'saruse kalba. Can we neuter a dog? Huh? The Gemara just flows right into that. Can you neuter? The question was asked of Ben Zoma if you can neuter a dog. When was the question asked? Was this question asked on the road trip? Was it asked in one of the heavenly spheres? So Acher was busy looking at Metatron, and Ben Zoma wanted to know if you could neuter a dog according to Halacha? And then the Gemara says, Sha'alu et Ben Zoma. It's another question they asked him. Besula she'ibra mahu lekohen gadol. A virgin who is pregnant, but still a virgin. Don't ask any questions. Can she marry the Kohen Gadol? Kohen Gadol can only marry a virgin. What if she's pregnant and a virgin? What a bizarre turn of events in this narrative. So in the middle of this whole esoteric story, and in the middle of discussing Acher's downfall, we are suddenly presented with two halakhic questions that were presented to Ben Zoma. When? On the road trip? On the way? When they were inside? When they left? What does this have to do with our story about Kabbalah? And then it tells one more story about Ben Zoma, which we'll do in English. A story involving Ben Zoma. The rabbis taught in a braita, an incident occurred with Rabbi Yehoshua ben Hananya as he was standing upon a step in the Temple Mount. Okay, most of us have been to the Temple Mount, and you know what these steps look like. They've been uncovered. You may have seen the 3D model, so imagine this in your head. Now Ben Zoma, who was much younger than Rabbi Yehoshua, saw him there, but did not stand up before him as befit his dignity. So you have Rabbi Yehoshua, this great sage, this great elderly sage walking by. Ben Zoma's sitting there, and he forgets to stand up. Oy! He didn't stand up. Noting this absent-minded behavior, Rabbi Yeshua said to him, "Where are you coming from and where are you headed to, Ben Zoma?" What a bizarre thing. So, we're on the Temple Mount. First of all, we're in the middle of a really good story, and suddenly we get this interruption. But in the interruption of the really good story, we get another story, and they're sitting on the Temple Mount, and one of our main characters, Ben Zoma, is sitting there, and the big rabbi comes by, and he doesn't stand up, and he says to him, "Where are you going, and where are you coming from?" Cotton Eye Joe. Nobody got that. Okay, where are you coming from and where are you going? What a bizarre thing to say to him. Was he angry at him? Was he not angry at him? I don't know. Ben Zoma replied to him, "I was surveying the space between the upper waters and the lower waters, and I discovered that there is between them where they join only 3 fingers' breadth." In other words, where was he? Woo! He's, you know, in some other place. He said, "Why didn't you stand up for me?"
"Because I'm in a deep meditative state. I'm surveying the space between the upper waters and the lower waters in the heavenly spheres."
Later, Rabbi Yeshua told his disciples, "Ben Zoma is still on the outside." That's a euphemism. Still on the outside. Okay? What does that mean? What does it mean that Ben Zoma, who was an outstanding Talmud Chacham, was the great of the Darshanim, never got smicha, and when caught on the scepter of the Temple Mount was in this other place? I think the key are those two halachic questions that were asked of him. Without going into the details of how he's passing on neutering a dog, or this bizarre situation of this girl who claims to be a virgin and yet she's going to marry the Kohen Gadol, even though she's pregnant. At least on one of these two issues, Ben Zoma's opinion is not accepted in halacha. Two halachic questions are posed to him. He and the Gemara presents his answers, and that's not the way we hold according to many. Now, the fact that someone's opinion is not accepted in halacha is an everyday occurrence. It's no great shame to be wrong in halacha if you're sitting in the Gemara. But why does the Gemara, which is trying to explain to us why Ben Zoma does not succeed, why would it suddenly bring two halachic questions and Ben Zoma's contribution or lack of contribution to those halachic discussions? The answer, I believe, is because Ben Zoma was the great of the Darshanim. And I think what the Gemara means in Sota, that he was the great of the Darshanim, means that he was great in Drasha, not in terms of merely the Drasha, in terms of how do you learn a particular Pasuk, but it emphasizes what he was and what he wasn't grounded in. Ben Zoma studied the Drashos. Ben Zoma studied Kabbalah. Ben Zoma didn't have smicha. Ben Zoma was answering questions in halacha, and his halachic opinions were not necessarily accepted. Which means, and I only say this because the Gemara seems to be trying to explain to us the reason for his failure, that Ben Zoma was a Torah great, but was not grounded in practical halacha. He was of the greatest of the sages. But his greatness and his knowledge was in the esoteric realm, was in the drasha realm, was not grounded in practical halacha. Did he not know halacha? I'm sure he knew halacha. He knows much more than we do. But despite his greatness, he was not grounded well enough in halacha to what?
to engage in esoteric thought. There's nothing wrong with Ben Zoma. Ben Zoma was great. He was phenomenal. We're not questioning whether he was a scholar or not. But the Gemara is trying to explain, why does he fail? And the Gemara says, it's fine if you want to focus on the more esoteric parts, and you want to focus on the more midrashic parts of Torah, that's fine. But it makes study of Kabbalah dangerous, because Kabbalah needs to be grounded in the Dalet Amot of Halacha. That was not his area of strength. Acher fails because he walks into Kabbalistic thought without having all of his Hashkafic things together. Ben Zoma fails because he is not fully grounded within the Halakha. He's not ready, despite the fact that he was great. Why is Ben Azai not ready? We don't know a lot of things about Ben Azai, but he is most famous for intentionally remaining single. Ben Azai is a character who specifically remains single so that it won't get in the way of his learning. There's a fascinating Gemara in Yevamos that discusses the need to have children. And it's Ben Azai himself who says, one who abstains from procreation. Now, what does it mean to abstain from procreation? It doesn't mean to not have kids. We're not in charge of whether we have kids. We can't decide that we're going to get married. And we can't decide that if we're married, we're going to have children. We can do what we can. One who abstains from procreation is regarded as if he has both spilled blood and diminished the divine image. Ben Azai said, someone who says, I can't get married, I can't have a family, I can't stop learning. Terrible. Then they said to Ben Azai, there are those who preach well and perform well. There are others who perform well but do not preach well. In other words, no. No. But you decided not to get married. You don't happen to be single. You decided to not get married because you want to sit in the vice measures the whole time. And he says, what can I do? For my soul craves the Torah. This world can be preserved through other people. Ben Azai answers, and by the way, the Gemara does not seem to say that he's wrong. Please understand me. Ben Azai answers, I am one of those rare individuals who just can't split my attention. I am totally focused on my learning. I cannot give attention to another person. I know myself. I know that I can only study. I cannot get married. I cannot have children. I cannot split. Doesn't really sound like our religion, by the way. There's another religion, Lahavdil, that believes in such an idea. That you can't really love God and love a family member. It's a conflict. He says, for me, it actually is a conflict. Now, ironically, this particular person does become engaged. According to one tradition, he actually does betroth a woman. He gives her a ring. He does what the Rosh Yeshiva tells him to do, but he never gets around to the rest of the marriage. And that girl is Rabbi Akiva's daughter. Interesting. Now, Rabbi Akiva kind of did this, right? He got married and then he went to learn in yeshiva, but there was some marriage there before. After, he took it to an extreme. He gave her the ring and he said, okay, very nice, I'm gone. The Gemara, I want to be clear, does not censure him for this itself.
We don't understand what it means to be Ben Azai. The Gemara doesn't censure Ben Azai for this decision.
Rabbi Akiva does not censure his quote-unquote son-in-law for this decision. But that's what we know about Ben Azai.
And I would suggest as follows. This very trait of Ben Azai, as great as it was, made him incapable of going into the parties. Just as Ben Zoma's love for drash, love for Kabbalah,
wasn't in and of itself a bad thing, it just made him not ready to go into the orchard, so too Ben Azai, his love for Torah, his love for God, made him not ready to go into the orchard. Let me show you what I mean. Four go in and three fail. But the three fail in different ways. And the three fail specifically according to their own crack, according to their own problem. Acher, who had philosophical problems, who had theological issues, what happens to him?
Ben Zoma doesn't become a heretic.
He doesn't become a heretic. He doesn't walk in with those issues. Ben Zoma goes crazy. As the Gemara says, it's like someone who eats honey till they get sick.
He gets so involved in the esoteric
that he just loses his mind. He's not grounded in practical things. He's sitting there upset, imagining what's between the two.
That's why, it's not just that he fails, but he fails in this way.
Why is Ben Azai God? What happens, ladies and gentlemen, when we die?
Our rabbis tell us that when we die, we see an image of God. Right? Before we die, why do we close the eyes of a dead person? Because the last thing that they saw was an image of the divine. It's that very image of the divine that causes their soul to leave their bodies. Because the soul says, I'm out of here. I don't want to be down here anymore. Look what's up there. And we close the eyes. The last thing they should have seen was the divine.
When the Jews are standing at Sinai in 2 weeks,
they die. Or they think they're going to die when they hear the voice of God.
Why? Because the soul is only safe down here because it doesn't really know what's up there. The soul is only willing to stay in the body because it doesn't have a real sense of what's going on up there.
Once they heard the voice of Hashem, the soul said, I'm out of here.
What happens if a person doesn't get a full vision of God?
What happens if they get part of that vision? What if they begin to go into the heavenly spheres and they begin to see things
and their soul wants to leave? What keeps it from leaving?
I would suggest that in the highest forms of Kabbalistic meditation, what keeps it from leaving are the attachments that the person has down here. Especially the attachments that they have down here that are supportive of their spiritual growth and of their connection with Hashem.
The soul has to decide, should I stay here in the land of the living,
or should I die? In other words, should I go and be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu?
Ben Azai is not held back.
There was nothing wrong with his decision per se. He was a unique individual who should have been studying all the time.
But because he wasn't grounded in his family, because he didn't have that support system almost holding onto his legs as he went up into the air, he dies. He never comes back. He says, I'm staying here with Hashem. Why am I going back?
It's not just that four went in and three didn't come back. The Gemara is telling us something so much more profound. There's a good reason why the three didn't come back. Because the three should have never gone in the first place. The three were great individuals. We can't even imagine what they were. But they lacked three things that one needs to go there. Certainly to go into the highest, I don't know what it means, to learn a Ramban that's based in Kabbalah. I'm not giving you a practical suggestion of not to show them a psak. Should anybody here learn Kabbalah? But the Gemara is teaching us at its highest levels, these mystical kinds of journeys, there's three things you really need. You need to make sure that your hashkafas are in order. You need to be grounded by halacha, and you need to be grounded by a support system down here to hold on to you, a family. Is there something inherently wrong with you if you don't have one of those three? No! You could still be Elisha ben Avuya, you could still be Ben Azza, you could still be Ben Zoma. But don't do this. Because this is not going to work well. Who makes it out? Who makes it out? The paradigm of these three things. I'm going to close with this. Once we assume that the three failed because they didn't have those three things, look at the man who makes it out. And note that it is no coincidence that Rabbi Akiva yatsa l'shalom. There is no one in our tradition who is as responsible for practical halakha as Rabbi Akiva. There is no one who is grounded in understanding the way we sock more than Paskin, more than Rabbi Akiva. Is there anyone who attributes his spiritual growth to his family and to his wife more than this man? Is there anyone else in all of our legends of the Talmud who, after all the years of his yeshiva, comes back home and the students are pushing away his wife and he says to them, "Don't you get it? Everything I am is because of her." There is no individual in our history who ever attributed his spiritual success to his wife more than this man. And there is not a single individual who believes in one God no matter what happens more than Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is on his deathbed and they're killing him. And they say to Rabbi Akiva, "What are you doing?" Rabbi Akiva says, "I'm saying Shema." And they say to Rabbi Akiva, "You're saying Shema, you got nothing else better to do at this moment." He goes, "No, I've always waited for the moment that I could give up my life for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'ahavta as Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha." And then he starts reciting the Shema, and he dies on one word. Which word does he die on? Isn't that a little strange? I would think that he should die on the word uvachol nafshecha, giving up your whole soul. He dies on the word echad. Ladies and gentlemen, what do we mean when we say that there is Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad? We don't mean that we don't believe in a pantheon of gods. What we say is that Hashem Echad, Hashem Elokeinu, whether He's doing good to us or whether He's doing bad to us, whatever it comes, whether it looks like we're being treated with Midas Harachamim or it looks like we're being treated with Midas Hadin, Hashem Echad, it all comes from one source. I don't care if God has my flesh peeled off. I know that there's only one God. There is not a God of good and a God of bad. There is only one God. That's Rabbi Akiva. And that's what the Gemara teaches us. The Gemara teaches us not just the fatal flaws of these three individuals, but the absolute greatness of the one man who comes out alive. It is specifically Rabbi Akiva whose faith is unshakable. It is specifically Rabbi Akiva who's responsible not just for great sayings and great Kabbalistic wisdom, but for the halakha l'maisa,
and specifically Rabbi Akiva, who's not just married and has a family, but who attributes everything back to them, and as far as he wanders from them, always will come back to them because he understands that they are the source of his strength. He comes out alive, and nobody else does.
Finally, with this perhaps we can understand a very famous insult given to this poor man. The Bavli in Bechoros, source number 10, says something that I find very troubling. Ben Azai, who was, okay, a little bit crazy, okay? Ben Azai already lost it a little bit. Ben Azai seemed to be praising his sort of father. Okay, the Gemara in Bechoros, source number 10. He wants to say something nice about his father-in-law. It's not always, you don't always know exactly what to say about your in-laws. You want to say something nice about your father-in-law. So what does he say? Kol chachmei Yisrael domin alai keklipat hashum. All of the sages of Israel are as a garlic peel compared to my shver. Unbelievable. But he doesn't call him my shver. He calls them chutz min ha-kereach hazeh. Everybody's a garlic peel, except Baldy, my shver. Kereach means a bald guy. The Gemara saw it fit to print this stuff. Listen, if he's got a little problem with his son-in-law, let them deal with it themselves. The Gemara prints this, that all of the sages of Israel are nothing compared to this bald guy. Crazy. And because of this line in Bechoros, there is a tradition that Rabbi Akiva, like the prophet Elisha, were great bald men. And it just goes to show that bald men can also achieve great things. So bizarre! Now, when Elisha is called a bald guy, when a couple of kids in Israel call Elisha a bald guy, he brings out a couple of bears, and the bears eat the kids. So clearly it's not a good idea. So why would he call Elisha Bear the bald guy? Professor Chaim Kolitz, in a book he wrote about Rabbi Akiva, gives this punchline. The word kereach means bald, but the word kerach, kereach, also means ice. Why would he call his father-in-law the ice man? Because if you look at the Haftorah of the first day of Shavuos, which you're not supposed to look at, because it's a view of the heavenly chariot, and we're not supposed to really pay attention to it, and I don't really know what it means. But if you look at that Haftorah, the first chapter of Yechezkel, it also talks about a spiritual, mystical journey from one level of angel to another level of angel. And at a certain point, we don't have any idea what this means, but you get to a ceiling. And the ceiling is made of ice. Pasuk Chavbet Udmut al Rosh Hachaya Rekia Kein HaKerach. When you get up to a certain level, when you're going through this journey and you're going through this meditative thing, you will finally get to a place and it looks like there's a ceiling, and the ceiling is made of ice, and it appears to be ice. Now go back to the first line of our story. Before they entered, Rabbi Akiva said to them as a warning, when you reach the pure marble stones, do not say there is water here, there is water here, how can I continue further? Rabbi Akiva says you're going to get to a point in our journey and they're going to be pure marble stones, and they're going to look like frozen water, and it's going to look like ice, and you're going to say, how can I go any further? And Rabbi Akiva knows, because of everything that he knows, and all the faculties
he's grounded that you can go even further and then you can come back.
Ben Azai doesn't call his father Baldy. He calls his shver the Iceman, because it is a reference to that layer of ice, that place that you get to that is the difference between the men and the boys. We have no idea what that really means. But out of respect for the one who could pull it all together, he calls his shver the Iceman. Not the Baldy, but the man who could stare the ice, what appears to be physical ice, and realize that it is just a vision. Realize that it is something much more. I wish everyone a happy Lag BaOmer. This is probably enough Kabbalah for us for one day, and safe journeys to wherever you go.